PPI.org.
Thank you for joining Disability and Progress, where we bring you insights into ideas about and discussions on disability topics. My name is Sam. I'm the host of this show. Thanks so much for tuning in. Charlene Dahl is my research woman. Good evening, Charlene.
Good evening in this beautiful spring day in Minnesota.
It is pretty awesome. Tonight, we are speaking with another awesome person. He is all over the web, and it is Richard Turner, and Richard is a blind card mechanic. Good evening, Richard.
Hello there, Sam and Charlene.
Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. You really are all over the web.
I'm all over the world, as well.
Yes, well, you're just a worldly person. So thank you so much for coming on. I apologize that I'll have to ask the simple questions first, but, you know, there are people who don't know you still. So I want to start out by just kind of giving us a little brief history of you. Like, what? Tell us about you growing up, and you have a visual impairment, obviously, and tell us about that.
Okay, I'm going to real quickly, because I have that echo that you're talking about.
No, sorry.
I'm going to try something real quick.
All right.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you now.
Oh, I can hear me too.
Excellent.
Okay.
Sorry.
I grew up in San Diego, California.
A beautiful area.
I started losing my vision when I was 9 years old. And then by 1963, we were a card-playing family, very, very, very poor family. Had four games, Monopoly, chess, checkers, and a deck of cards. I was the oldest. And I didn't like to lose, so I started figuring out ways how to make sure I won when we played cards and Monopoly, and that was kind of my upbringing and my interest in with cards.
What a poor example you set for your sibling.
we played for M&M's.
Oh, that
and
explains
the red ones were the most valuable.
Everything.
And I wanted High those stakes. Red M&M's. Yeah. Then I wanted the green ones, then the yellow ones, then I'd settle for the brown ones at the end.
So for me, I would have said, well, it's all chocolate, right? So you got to have it all.
Yeah.
So you had, your visual impairment was Charles Bonnet syndrome? Or Charles Bonnet syndrome?
Yeah, that's what I have.
Tell us about...
It's a very rare condition.
Tell us what that is and what happens.
Okay, hold on one second. I'm trying another experiment. You know how it is when you have that echo and you hear yourself.
I know.
Yeah, still there. Well, Charles Bonnet syndrome, it was first documented by Charles Bonnet back in 1760.
Okay.
And basically what it means is I see my subconscious in external space.
Mm-hmm.
Most people that don't see will see nothing or black or whatever. But I see all kinds of beautiful, vivid colors, patterns, shapes, every subconscious image you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I don't see them in the back of the brain or in your mind, like when you're dreaming or imagining. I actually look at them. I see them in front of me just as clearly as a sighted person will see what's in front of them.
Okay.
But the cool thing is I can design houses and decks and play games and create games. I can write in the air like you're writing on a chalkboard.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll write down a phone number, and I will take a picture of it. And because I have what's called a eidetic memory, I'll never forget it. So I'm kind of like a walking catalog.
Wow. So what causes it?
They Dr. Oliver Sacks is the one that's done the most studies on that particular condition. And he was a best-selling author. Mm-hmm. His books was called Hallucinations, and it probably dove into Charbonnet syndrome more than anything else. And the other one was called The Mind's Eye. And The Mind's Eye is the way he defined seeing the way someone with CBS Charbonnet syndrome sees. Mm-hmm. And up until 1990, there were only 6 documented cases. And then he documented a few dozen others. But most people that have it have a hard time with it because they almost borderline suicide.
Oh.
But for me, I look at it as just a real blessing because I live in a very, very beautiful world, and I wouldn't trade my world for someone else's world.
What was your family's reaction to your vision loss? And did it have anything to do with how you reacted to it?
Yeah, at first my mom was sympathetic.
Mm-hmm.
And then she kind of looked at me and my sister as if we were broken. And so that was a very hard time in my life because I basically was rejected because of the fact that I was losing my sight. And my sister lost her sight as well.
Mm.
We don't know if this is the commonality of what caused it, but we both got scarlet fever.
Oh, wow.
And we both had the same thing happen to each of us.
Mm-hmm.
And we're 4.5 years apart. I'm sorry, we're 3.5 years apart in age.
So is she as wild and outgoing as you?
Yeah, I call her my genius sister. She owned and ran one of the largest construction companies in the entire state of Idaho.
Wow, cool.
She did $10 million, $50 million, $100 million projects.
When you were growing up, it sounds like you were really kind of out there, meaning that you really, if there was anything to try to do, you would try to do it. If anything, if you could overcome anything, you would do it. Do you think that attitude made a difference in how kids treated you while you were growing up?
Well, I think that it was probably the flip of that, in that I didn't like when I was teased or harassed, and because I was the littlest or second littlest in my class, and then I was the one that was losing my sight lost my sight, you know, I was teased, and so I felt like I had to take things to the extreme, and I really did go the other direction. I would climb 1,000-foot cliffs without equipment. I learned to swing on the trapeze under Bob Yerkes, who's done more stunts than anybody in the history of Hollywood. Thousands of movies, thousands of television shows. I was just with him about 3 weeks ago. He's 89 years old and been doing stunt work for 73 years now. A great, great brother, friend. And then my karate instructor, John Murphy, I started the martial arts in 1971.
Mm-hmm.
And Murphy didn't care if you were blind, deaf, or dumb. He beat everyone equally. And so he really kind of beat heart into me.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, he gave me the confidence to believe that I can overcome anything. You know, because it was a hard-style karate school that was in Tijuana, Mexico, south of San Diego. And the reason why it was there is because there were very few rules, and he didn't want to have lawsuits and so on. And so it was very hardcore. But anyway, I wanted to be a fighter, and as they call it, a karateka.
Mm-hmm.
And I would exercise my brains out and do things to overcome the fears that I had that were partly established as a kid from two main things.
Mm-hmm.
One was a movie called Lord of the Rings. It was about a group of boys that were stranded on an island.
Oh, Lord of the Flies,
they became savages. And then one of them's name was Piggy, P-I-G-G-Y, Piggy.
Yeah.
And he was a chubby, blind, asthmatic coward, and they end up killing Piggy. And I kind of felt like I was a skinny, blind, asthmatic coward, and I did not want to be that coward. So that was one movie that kind of pushed me to the point of going the opposite direction. The other one was a TV show called Lost in Space, mm-hmm. and starring Jonathan Harrison. He played Dr. Smith, who was the coward that was hiding behind some rock when this paper mache monster would come up, and little Billy Mummy would go and fight the monster while this other adult cowered behind a rock. Mm. And so between those things, I kind of went the other direction. If there was a challenge out there, I had to go for it. If there was a tree that fell across a 100-foot cliff, mm-hmm. I had to cross that tree. If there was a cliff, I had to dive off the cliff into the ocean. And I had a few crazy accidents during the years, but I could go on and on. So I'll let you ask another question, because I've done 1,000 things in my crazy life.
I know that movie, that Lord of the Flies that you're talking about. That's a horrible movie, by the way. I totally agree with you.
Yes, it terrified me.
It's a horrible movie.
You know how old I was when we had to watch it?
No.
1962, 63, and 64, when that second, third, and fourth grade.
I don't understand why people would show that to kids. Yeah, that's sad.
Yeah.
I wonder...
Their rationalization at the time was that it proved evolution. Mm. That if you put a bunch of boys together, they will revert back to the animalistic tendencies. So that was the rationalization between the...
Listen,
from the teachers.
You put a bunch of grown-ups together, they do the same thing. So I'm wondering, you know, as you're getting older and going through stuff, people do this to people with disabilities. I notice they see them as like this amazing person. And when you do something that is even hard for somebody who can fully see or can fully do whatever, they always come off as seeing you as amazing and on and on and on. Did you want to be seen as that, or did you want to be seen like them?
No, I wanted to be perfectly honest and excuse the arrogant sound. I wanted to be the best at what I did.
Mm.
And not based on, I didn't want to be the best card guy in the world, the best blind card guy. I wanted to be the best card guy, period.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's just the way I approach things. And so I did whatever was necessary to make that happen. And basically what that entailed was thousands and thousands of hours of constant practice. With the cards, I would put in 10 to 20 hours a day, 7 days a week, and I sustained that for 26 years straight.
Man. Richard, could you tell me, I notice you like to be called a blind card mechanic. So what's the difference between a mechanic and a magician? I'm sure you get asked that all the time. That's
a very good question, and I don't like to be called a blind card mechanic. I just like to be called a card mechanic.
Okay.
A card mechanic is somebody who can control the outcome of a card game. The techniques for the card table to make somebody win or lose at poker, blackjack, bridge, hold'em, whatever the game, those techniques are 1,000 times more difficult to accomplish than the techniques used for a magician to perform card magic. There are thousands of very good top card magicians. There are half a dozen world-renowned card mechanics, because the work is just so much, it just takes so many more years. Most hustlers back in the 19th century, they would spend 10, 20, 30 years of their life developing one or two moves, and that's what they were known for.
Mm-hmm.
And I just happened to just put in a lot more time and and developed everything under the sun.
So are you telling me that no casino will let you play?
The casinos around the world know me very well. They say, Richard, how are you doing? May we buy you dinner? Stay 10 feet away from the table.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah. No. In fact, we know each other so well. I can tell you offhand their private home numbers and their private cell numbers.
Oh, that's funny. So you have some amazing experiences in your karate. When you did all of this, that did you feel like that helped you with mechanics of knowing your spatial area and everything since you had a visual impairment?
Oh, big time. Very, very astute on your end. Mm-hmm. So situational awareness in the martial arts. If you're fighting somebody, you need to know exactly how far that person away is, where the threat lies, how mm-hmm. far their foot is from your face versus how far their fist is from your face. Mm-hmm. So that did teach me spatial awareness. But as a fighter, I was never a counterpuncher. As a counterpuncher, I just got hit.
Ah, you always...
I was always on the offense.
Ah.
So as soon as it was time to fight, I would run down my opponent, and then once you have any kind of contact or know where they are, then you know where every part of their body is, and you can go from there.
And what part of you, what made you want to do something like that?
Well, I went as a little... Now, let me tell you a story. I was in a Boys Club competition mm-hmm. in San Diego, California. It was a statewide competition. And I was a very good artist. Started at 5 years old. I could paint and draw beyond my years. And I got a lot of attention for that.
Uh-huh.
Then my vision started going south when I was 9. And so now I could no longer paint and draw. And so I was in this competition, and I was painting 3 vases with the proper lighting, shadowing, and so forth. And my nose was literally against the canvas, mm-hmm. so I could just see what I could out of the corner of my eye. And I took first place. And then there were these 2 boys that didn't like that. And so they came up to me. They started pushing me around. One of them picked the wallet out of my back pocket while the other one flipped the bird in front of my face and said, "Hey, Magoo, how many fingers am I holding up?"
Oh, yeah, I've had that one.
And then, and then he would hold the wallet in front of my face and go, "Got any money, Magoo?" And when I would grab for my wallet, he'd throw it over my face, over my head to his friend behind me.
Oh, keep away.
A cruel game of keep away.
Right.
And then they started slapping me across the face with that wallet. To say, "Got any money, blind boy?" And then they took my money. They kicked me. They tripped me. And that one kicked me. Guy kicked me in the ribs. They took my $3, which for me was a massive fortune.
Sure.
Threw the wallet back at me and said, "Thanks for the hot dog, blind boy." And that was it. That is what made me go, "I want to kick their faces in."
Yeah.
So. And at that time on TV was a show called The Green Hornet, starring Bruce Lee as Kato.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought one day I would learn karate and not have that happen anymore.
Charlene knows that show.
Yeah, I had 5 brothers, so yeah.
Yeah, you had brothers.
Talk a little bit about your relationship with your sister. You both were kind of in that same camp that you were losing your vision. It sounds like kind of together. Was that mm-hmm. a kind of a bonding thing between you two then? You could kind of confirm and feel what each other's going through?
Well, not really, because we were so far apart in age.
Ah.
Let me ask this. Did you see the movie Dealt?
No.
Yeah, they made a movie on my life last year called Delt, D-E-A-L-T, as in Delta Card, and it's audio described.
And
it's won all kinds of awards. It's 95 on Rotten Tomatoes. And in the States, you watch it on Hulu, iTunes, Google Play, Amazon Prime.
Okay.
Or any video on demand platform outside the U.S. It's on new Netflix and other platforms. But my sister is a part of the story, and she approached things differently than I did, where I did not want anyone to mention anything about the fact that I had a vision issue.
Right.
Where she had no problem with that. And it took me to the point when I lost my vision 100% that I finally realized that I needed to accept help from others and not be so darn stubborn and bullheaded.
Do you think it was because you could hide it for a while?
I did a good job of hiding it. Mm. I was in my first director was a guy named Steve Terrell. He was a TV and movie star back in the 50s and early 60s. He's 89 years old now. I mentioned earlier, my stepman friend, Bob Yerkes.
Uh-huh.
They grew up in Hollywood together. That's why they're the same age. And Steve taught me how to play the sort of a sighted person. I was in a theater, and we would be rehearsing a scene. And at the time, I had no forward vision. Mm-hmm. So I'd have to turn my head to the side and look out of the corner of my eye to see the actor that I was speaking with. And he said, Rick, but they called me Rick back then, said, Rick, that looks odd to the audience. When you're talking to the person in front of you, but you're looking at 2 o'clock instead of at 12 o'clock. Mm. And he said, a sighted person will play the part of a blind person. He said, I want you to flip the roles. You're going to be a blind person, and you're going to play the part of a sighted person. So he taught me how to square my head towards any person I'm talking to or to their voices. And then I taught myself how to take my eyes and have them focus in on short distance, long distance, because a lot of people will have this spaced out look with their eyes because there's different types of vision. You know, there's close-up vision when you're reading a book. Mm-hmm. Your eyes have a different focus to them, like a camera lens. And if you're looking out at something 50 feet away, that's a different focus that your eyes do. And so I trained myself to create a picture using my CBS, my Charbonnet syndrome, mm-hmm. of somebody that's 5 feet away, say, and I would focus my eyes right on the center of their voice based on a 5 foot distance, a 7 foot distance, a 20 foot distance.
Excellent. And I presume in the movie Delt, you were playing yourself?
Yes. It was what's called a feature documentary film. They spent 5 years in production, and they had a very, very substantial budget. And I basically had 1 to 10 cameras follow me and my family around the world as I'm performing and doing this, that, and they got all of my archival footage.
Mm-hmm.
When I took my black belt test, I had to fight 10 men in a row, 10 3-minute rounds with a fresh black belt each round.
Jeez.
And all you had to do was come out alive. it was covered by ABC News, and it was also on the front page of Los Angeles Times sports section. And so they had all this archival footage of the stuff I've done over the past 45 years in the entertainment business. So between that and then the new footage that they shot, which was over 3,000 hours of footage,
mm-hmm.
They put together the narrative.
Are you aware of the ordeal that's going on now in regards to, you know, entertainment not being willing so much to hire people who are visually impaired or blind to play sighted roles or even play blind roles that they're...
Oh, yeah, I've heard some of the controversy on that.
What's your feelings on that?
Well, that a lady named Michelle Spitz, mm-hmm. S-P-I-T-Z, she's an heiress.
Mm-hmm.
She has done more audio description for different films, I think, than anybody I know. And she's a great advocate on it. And when she heard that they want to turn my life into a major motion picture, she said, oh, that'd be great to get a blind person to play you. And I told her that can't work, because that the actor that plays me is going to have, you know, that person is going to have to be able to lift 350 pounds. They're going to have to be able to do the splits. They're going to have to be able to do all kinds of very high-end physical things that your best actor out there with that's fully sighted is going to have to really go through a lot of work to be able to prepare for the part. So, and then when she realized that, you're not going to find someone that's going to be able to play that, a blind person play that part. Because I don't know any athletes out there that were world class.
So you played it.
Yes, I played it. But they're talking when they have a couple with the narrative that's going to be coming out. Narrative is a Hollywood word for a major motion picture, because they're going to turn this film into a where someone else will play me, and it will have to be a high-end athlete, as well as somebody that can learn some of the stuff with cards. I will be there. I call myself, I'll be the card stuntman.
That's right.
Because
exactly.
No one else is going to be able to do the things that I do with the cards, so that will have to be CGI'd in or something.
Right. Richard, tell us about card mechanics. What does it mean exactly? What can you do?
As I was saying earlier, it's somebody who can control a card game. I'll give you some for instances, because people have a picture in their mind. Oh, he does card tricks. No. Here's a for instance. You can take the different cards and shuffle them up.
Mm-hmm.
You can say, I want to play Texas Hold'em. I want to have five players at the table.
Okay.
I want player three to be the winner. And I want player three to win with a full house. You shuffle those cards up, hand them to me, player three just won with a full house. Or you can say, let's play blackjack. And I will whip everybody every single hand. You may have heard that there was a movie out called 21 about the MIT students
mm-hmm.
that took on the casinos.
Mm-hmm.
I was on a TV show where one of these world-renowned card counters was going to demonstrate how he can beat the house. But what he didn't know is they brought me in as the dealer for that segment. And we filmed for over 2 hours, never won one hand.
Oh.
Here's another for instance for you. You can say, I say, what card do you like? You say sevens. I'll say, how many players do you want? You'll say six. I'll say, where do you want to sit? One, two, three, four, five, six. You might pick four. So I would then give the deck three casino shuffles. The deck list stays face down on the table. I will then hand you the deck back, and I'll say deal out six hands of whatever the game. We'll just say we deal them all face up.
Mm-hmm.
And the 4th, 10th, 16th, and 22nd card off the deck was the 7. So in other words, I shuffled your cards back in the deck exactly where you chose, and then you dealt to prove that I did it. So that's a for instance of what a card mechanic is. I can, through the natural, normal course of a card game, without creating suspicion or using misdirection, make anybody win or lose.
And you're going by, like, thickness, weight?
Thickness, weight, texture, caliper, all, yeah, you're exactly right. All things based on very, very fine touch.
And
I've actually been studied two Harvard projects on the brain because of the level of touch that I have. They say I have the most developed haptic and tactile neural network of anybody on the planet Earth.
Huh. You know, I never want to play you.
Nobody wants to play. It's so sad, Sam.
I know. I'm so sorry. You know, you talk about being a card snob. Talk a little bit about that. How do you choose your deck of cards or what you like?
Oh, yes. I bumped my phone. Oh, be quiet, lady. Be quiet. That's my iPhone talking at me. Well, I'm actually the touch analyst for U.S. Playing Card Company. Mm-hmm. They're the biggest card maker in the country. Just about every brand that you're familiar with. Bicycle is the most recognized. They've been making those since the 1880s. B is their premium product. They've been making those since 1892. And then they make Kim, Hoyle, Steamboat, Tally Ho, all the other labels, even Coors cards and Pepsi back cards. And I'm their touch analyst, so I help them make better cards because I can feel things about a deck of cards that is more I'm more precise than some of their measuring devices. So they put me on retainer about 20 years ago to help them make sure their cards are a certain quality. And yes, I am a snob, card snob. And and the thing is, I make the best made cards in the world with U.S. Playing Card Company. And like I said, Bicycle is the most recognized deck. And you can Google either gold standard bicycles, gold seal bicycles, or just Richard Turner cards. But there's a card inside the box that says, tested and approved by Richard Turner.
Oh, cool.
And all the top gamblers, all the top card magicians, and the top card men around the world use the card that I've tested and approved.
And what is it about them that makes it a quality deck?
Ooh, yeah. Well, there's about a dozen things that I will test. One is the first is the snap. Mm-hmm. That's based on moisture level. You probably didn't know that you could touch a card. You probably didn't know there was like a 5.2% moisture level in that card.
I did not.
Yeah, most people think it's just dry, solid, but no. And we've determined I like a moisture level of 4.5%. Then that's the first thing. That will determine the snap. How long the card will last. When you bend it, it will snap back into place. Mm-hmm. The next thing is the cut. If it's traditionally cut or non-traditionally cut. Traditionally cut is where the blade goes through the face of the card when it's cut into a single cut versus the blade going through the back of the card. And why that makes a difference is almost everybody will shuffle the cards face down with the thumb on the bottom working its way up. Mm. And because you have the rounded edge on the underside, you're going with the grain. If the cards are non-traditionally cut, it's like turning a deck over, you go to shovel, they bind up on you. And this was a change they first made in 1993 by accident. And the casinos were really ticked, the dealers. They didn't know what the problem was, but all they knew was the cards were not as user-friendly. And I'm the one that identified the problem and solved the problem for them, among dozens of other things. But that's a couple of the things that I look for. And then the caliper. I like a caliper of between 10.9 thousandths to 11.5 thousandths.
And you can tell that.
That's the thickness of the card, the caliper.
Yeah.
And then the embossing depth, you know, I want a deeper embossing depth on the back than on the face of the card. So, and the reason for the embossing is so that the card can breathe. When your moisture from your fingers get on the card, they will start sticking together. So the card has to breathe.
That's what that is. What is your favorite card thing to do? What's your favorite thing to do to show people?
Well, one of my favorite, more difficult pieces that I do is I will have someone shuffle up a deck of cards. Mm-hmm. And my favorite game is seven card stud. I will say how many players. I'll say six, whatever it happens to be. Mm-hmm. I'll say, where do you want to sit? One, two, three, four, five, six. They'll say they choose three. They will shuffle them up, and I tell them, don't give me the whole deck back. Just hand me any random part of that deck. They might give me 10 cards, 12 cards, 5 cards, and I'll start dealing around. I'll deal the card. It's a slow motion selected position. I'll give whatever remainder cards back in my hand to them, tell them to shuffle them up some more, and just hand me pull out any stack out of that deck. And then I'll deal the next round, and I'll have them do that every time I go around the table. And the point of that is, even if the deck was face up, and you could see every card coming off the deck, or it had a giant embossed K on the K, and a J on the J, and an A on the A, it would have been inconceivable to have controlled anything, even if you could see or feel every card coming off the deck. So when I really want to really bug somebody, that's one of my favorite things to do.
I want to talk about probably one of the first times that I was introduced to you was on the Penn and Teller show.
And yeah, that was so much fun.
So whose idea was it to have you do that? And what were your feelings when you actually went on there to do it?
Well, one of the judges on Penn and Teller was a guy named Johnny Thompson. Mm-hmm. Sadly, he passed away about a month and a half ago.
Aww.
I was just at the funeral at the Penn and Teller Theater. He was one of my mentors 50 years ago. He was 84 when he passed away. Anyway, I would get an email, Richard, they're inviting me to come on Penn and Teller's TV series. And I ignored it on season one. Then I get invitation to come on season two. I ignore it. And then I'm in Vegas with Johnny Thompson, and Johnny goes, Richard, I've been inviting you to come on Penn and Teller's show. Why do you keep ignoring me? I said, Johnny, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know that was you. And so, I went on the show and I fooled them faster than anybody in the history of their show. They had absolutely no clue of what I was doing. Even afterward, I spent a lot of time together and showing them in slow motion. And Penn actually told this story on some TV show somewhere. Forbes magazine, Forbes tele show. Uh-huh. Anyway, and he said, Teller's eyes are 2 to 3 inches away from Richard's fingers. And he's explaining exactly what he's doing, and he still can't see it. He said, all he's doing is making our brains hurt. and so when I went to do the show, the little backstory beforehand, they said, Richard, you have to tell us how you do it so we can make a judgment. I said, nobody in the world knows how I do what I do. And they said, we know that, but you got to give us something to work with. And so then I said, okay, watch. And I showed them what I was going to do. And they went, oh, my God, it really is impossible. And so that's when Penn stood up, and I was supposed to have a 6-minute interview with Allison, the hostess mm-hmm. of the show. And Penn just stood up, and Penn and Teller have a nonverbal way of communicating
right,
with each
right.
other.
Yeah.
And Penn turns around and says, we have nothing to say. You fooled us. You fooled us. And then I won't tell you what Teller said afterwards
yeah.
because he uses very colorful language.
Right, right. Yeah, I saw that because one never talks on the show. And so,
yeah,
you know, Teller. Right. And so there's that communication bit that goes on. I want to step back a minute and talk about, you know, years before where you did not, and I think this isn't uncommon, you know, people want to be seen as the best or good ever, whatever what they're doing. But you did not want really your disability or blindness to get in the way of anything. And I think that's common with a lot of people. But I think now you're kind of like embracing it. What changed for you?
That you know, I'm 65 now. I don't care what people think about me anymore. I don't have to be this tough karate guy that, you know, Mr. Macho, whatever, And so as my wife said, get over yourself. You know, people want to hear, people want to help. You, what you have to say is encouraging to people. It shows them that whatever their situation is, and everybody has a situation or a problem, something they deal with. They may have been assaulted when they were a kid. They may be just lazy. I think that's one of the worst disabilities you can have.
Yes.
Or a procrastinator. People that procrastinate drive me nuts. And I would rather have blindness over that any day of the week. And but at the same time, I have people from all over the world sending me notes saying they saw the movie Dealt and that it inspired them to realize that it doesn't matter what my situation is. I have no excuse not to accomplish what I want to accomplish. So before, my thing was I just wanted to be an entertainer. I didn't want to be the blind entertainer. I just wanted to be a performer, the entertainer, the card guy. But now, because of the effect it has on people, as my wife says, I've got over myself, and I'm happy to share. If anyone has a question, whatever it is, I'm happy to say and share and not be such a coward.
You know, it's interesting, cause, and I know it'd be hard to answer this, but it's, I think, you know, now, like, you have done it. You know what I mean? You've reached those highest heights of your career. You were the best mechanic. You are the, you know, you were an excellent martial arts person. I wonder if you would have felt the same had you not been in the place where you were.
You mean if I had not lost my sight?
If you had lost your sight but not achieved the high heights that you have achieved.
Not quite.
So
grasping
if you had lost your vision but not achieved being like one of the best card mechanics, would you think you still would
have? I think it was in my DNA. my father was a gifted man, and my sister is, my brother is. My other brother is a champion surfer, and anyway, so there's something in our DNA, a family, that there's something about us that makes us push ourselves beyond
to the limit,
the standard points that other people will push themselves.
Do you ever think about?
And I can't sit still.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, they say let's go chill. To me, I go chill. That's punishment. Tell me to chill, is to relax. That's like they put me in the corner when I was a kid as a punishment. My parent mom would make me stand in the corner when I did something bad. To me, that's chilling. That's punishment. As the whole time I've been talking with you here, I've been practicing certain moves with the cards, and I love stretching my mind in other areas. In areas that I'm not good with, or I'm never good with, like writing and reading, and my sister really kind of pushed me in those areas when the talking technologies came available.
Ah, yes.
And they really did open so many wonderful doors.
Yes, they have.
And you know, I've been the keynote speaker at Apple, Google, Facebook, all those people. They're all a bunch of friends of mine, and they just create some of the most amazing. I'll just call it, not toys, but devices that are just so make it just puts you at a level playing field with any sighted person when it comes to just basic technology of typing, emails, texting, and everything else under the sun.
Have you ever thought about doing some kind of thing that teaches people who are visually impaired or blind how to do blind mechanics or tricks with the cards?
Two weeks a year I take time off to teach a class at a place called the San Antonio Academy, and sometimes I will have some visually impaired kids in there. In fact, if you watch the movie Dealt, you'll meet one of her. Name is Michaela, and she was like 13 years old at the time, and it was an inspiration for her, and the things that I teach them are magic tricks. totally different than what I do for my own show, because
right.
if I do my
right.
own show, obviously, as I stated earlier, it's just, you know, way, way too difficult.
Right.
But it does give them a level of confidence. And it does, you don't even have to be sight impaired or any impaired. It just gives you something that makes people go, wow. And all of a sudden you have an instant friend or instant admiration.
Yes, yes. What would you tell?
And right now, something really cool is, you know, I've designed a number of board games and mm-hmm. puzzle games. And one of the puzzle games is called Batty, B-A-T-T-Y.
Mm-hmm.
And I invented it when I was at the DH room 54 years ago. I took the Tower of Hanoi, and the Tower of Hanoi has a formula.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see the formula because they're discs that get bigger as they go down. I took it and I used cards and I turned it into a game where the formula is buried. And it will be coming out on the market as an app for your any iOS device and Android devices and every other thing. But it will, like I said, be hitting the world market in about 2 months. And then there's two other games that I created. One's called Shark Showdown, and the other one's Texas Showdown. And as one of my partners said, if you took blackjack, Monopoly, and poker, and they had a baby,
that would be it.
What would come out? This is it. So it has three of the most classic games of all times, and I turn them into a totally unique gaming experience.
Will they be on an app as well?
Yes, they will be, and they'll be everywhere. In fact, they're even talking about putting them in the casinos and in what's called real money gaming.
Yeah.
So, they'll be everywhere. And if I have to say, even though I'm the creator, I'm addicted to mountain games. They're fun. but one of them I use in when I speak. I do when I speak. I give keynote speeches, mm-hmm. speakers, and performances. So I combine my card work with my speaking, which helps keep people's attention, because people's attention drips away after 7 seconds.
Right.
And so I interlace them with my life stories and experiences with the cards. And then I will play this game, Batty, and I will use my CBS, where I can see with the mind's eye,
mm-hmm.
and I will have them have the cards in front of them, and they will turn the cards over, and I will play it in my mind without seeing them, and tell them where to move the card, and they're seeing the card, and see if they can keep up with me while they see it and I play it and I cannot see it.
I see.
In fact, right now, we can play a low level 5, and you'll get an idea.
Okay.
So we'll picture here. We have in front of us, we have an A, B, and a C from left to right. Okay.
Okay.
Now we're going to take a 5. We're going to play a low level 5. We're going to put that 5 face down on the C card. Now in my hand is a 4, 3, 2, 1. Sam, I'm handing you those cards face down. No peeking now.
Okay.
Now mix them up in your mind. Okay. Now lay them on top of the 5.
Okay.
Now you're going to tell me one at a time what the card is and the object is for me to get those cards in a mixed-up state on C, in order on A, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And there's only one rule.
Okay.
You cannot put a high card on a low card. Okay?
Right
now, you mind, you have a 4, 3, 2, 1. Tell me what the... Mix them up in your head. Tell me what the first card is.
3.
Put it on A. Next card.
1.
Put it on A. Next card.
4.
Put it on B. Now I'm going to move the 1 to the C. I'm going to move the 3 on top of the 4. I'm going to move the 1 back to A. Now turn over the 2. and I'll put it on the three. I'll move the one to the two. Now I can flip over the five. I'll move the five to eight. Now I get 4-3-4 on the five, but the 3-2-1 on the way, are in the way. So I'll move the one to the C, the two to the five, put the one on the two, put the three on the C, put the one in the middle, put the two on the three, put the one on the two. Now the four is open. I put the four on top of the five on eight. Now I got to get a three on there, but the two and one are in the way. So I'll move the one to the four, move the two to the middle, put the one on the two, and now I move the three over to the four. Now I'll move the one over to C. I'll move the two onto the three and the one on the two. And now I have 5-4-3-2-1 on A in order without placing a higher card on a low card. And the game starts at a level three, which is resolved in three, between 6 to 7 moves. And I've done it up to a level 14.
Oh, my.
Which is between 16,000 and 32,000 moves.
I don't
in
think
a particular sequence without a mistake.
I don't have that much time.
And the mistakes on that level are in the it costs you thousands of moves to fix a move, and the combinations are in the trillions times trillions.
I think I'll stick with level three. You know, it's almost
let's do a level three together. Okay, I'm gonna mix them up in my head. Now, picture in front of you right now. On your left, you have an A. Middle, you have a B. On the right, you have a C. Okay, the three is down on top of the C. I'm now mixing up the one and two. Okay, and I'm turning over the first card for you, and it is a what? What are you going to do with it? A or B?
A.
Good choice. I'm now turning over the next card to two. And you know you can't put it on the one, so what are you going to do with it?
Well, B, right?
Very good. And we know the third card is a three,
mm-hmm.
And we flip it over, even though we can't move it anywhere because it's higher than both. But we want that three on the A, so what's our next move?
Probably put the
one is on the three right now. The one is on the A right now.
Put the one to the B.
Very good. Now you can move your three where?
To the A.
Exactly. Now, what's our next move?
Move the
one in the middle.
To the C.
Very good. And then the?
Two to the A.
Excellent. Next move?
One to the A.
Very good. You just played a level three, and you didn't make a single mistake.
I can do simple things.
Yeah, but you have critical thinking skills.
Yes.
I can tell if somebody's right-brained or left-brained by just how they initially start off playing that game. So you have strong right brain capabilities.
It's good. I have one of them. what advice would you give people out there who have lost their vision and are just in that lost state?
Well, what I just tell anybody is look at everything as an adventure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything that I, you know, right now I just had a total knee replacement last week.
Ah, wow.
And it's my second one. I had one 2.5 years ago. And it was from all those roundhouse kicks I took to the knees from the years of fighting.
And
I look at it as an adventure. How fast can I be back up and doing what the doctor said you can't do, or you can't do this fast?
Mm.
So I always have to turn something into a challenge. I left the hospital. They want you to be at 120-degree angle on the bend of your knee,
mm-hmm.
after 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I was at 120-degree angle when I was still in the hospital the day after the surgery.
Wow.
And I'm already, you know, no walker, no cane. And I do, of course, there's still the pain. I'm still going through the rehabilitation because it's only been a week.
Right.
But my point is, that was an adventure. Instead of looking at it as, oh, God, you know, you just say, Lord, thank you for this opportunity and for this chance to have a little mountain and climb it, even though it's not a mountain I'd prefer to climb.
Mm.
But I just look at any situation as an adventure.
Richard, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. I will definitely go watch the movie Delt. Looking forward to it, actually. And tell us, where can people keep an eye out when your games are coming out? How can they know this?
RichardTurner52.com is my website. RichardTurner52.com. Richard Turner, how many cards on the deck?
52.
Yeah. And then my YouTube channel is AsaT52. My son's name is Asa Spades.
Oh.
A-S-A, his middle name is Spades, but just A-S-A-T-5-2. So, but if you just Google Richard Turner, I'm the first person that
you
shows up.
Definitely are.
And they have 172 million people that will be hearing about our game when it's launched, because that's how they are in their network right now.
Well, I'm excited. I can't wait to get it. So thank you so much.
You'll be able to play it. Like I said, now how much can you see, Sam?
None.
Okay. So we're twins.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So the thing is, it's one that you can play in your mind. You just have them tell you what the card is, and then you start moving around. And like I said, if I could sit here and take whatever level and move them faster than the person seeing them on stage can move them. So it's just kind of a fun thing. And it's a good brain exercise too.
Thank you so much, Richard.
You're very welcome. Thank you for inviting me. It was an honor to be with two lovely ladies.
Happy travels.
Happy travels and happy Mike.
You've been listening to Disability and Progress. The views expressed on the show are not necessarily those of KFAI or its board of directors. This is KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis and KFAI.org. My name is Sam. I'm the host of this show. If you want to be on my email list, you can email me at disabilityandprogress@samjasmine.com. Feel free to join us and see our podcast list. Ask your smart speaker to play the podcast or download our trusty smart app on your smartphone. Thanks so much for joining us. Goodbye.